The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 Truck Stop at Exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 Kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and, of course, the Super Truck Showroom stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. Iowa 80.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show from the Uniden America Studios. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we're Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Well, started thinking, this almost sounds as bad as a bloodbath. I have fasting blood work later on today.
Oh.
So let's just hope that the fasting blood work does not lead to a bloodbath of bad medical data.
We can only hope.
What are you, Keith Olbermann?
We can only hope.
That's what he said about the Biden-Harris campaign put out a clip. Trump says he's been treated worse than Abraham Lincoln, who was assassinated, the Biden campaign put out. Olbermann responded, linking to the post, "There's always hope." I wow. don't think that he was talking economic news there.
No.
Olbermann.
No.
His mother went down to the basement, gave him some milk and cookies, Mom! And said, okay, you've got free time on the computer, dear.
But only until 9. And then it's lights out for you, little man.
Yeah. Oh, no, by the way, everything's fine. I got to make sure everything's fine. It's just normal.
What's fine?
My fasting blood work. This is,
well, yeah. Did you get the blood work back yet?
No, but it's just normal.
Then I don't know that?
No, but I'm not going to. Well, sorry when you think about it.
Let's talk the results later then.
Now you've got me thinking. Oh, no. My blood work.
Oh, my God. That says everything.
Oh, no. It might be bad. No.
Gary, let's talk about your weekends. What, Doc?
No,
what?
It's my normal 6 months. So
yeah,
that's all right. It's no big deal. So
as far as we know,
and so I'm far. The bigger deal because I had a snack at 2 o'clock.
Right.
So that means I'll go home, go to sleep, wake up, and then go to the doctor's office and get a little bit after 10 o'clock. So it's 8 hours.
All right.
So they can check the cholesterol.
Yep.
How's your cholesterol?
Yeah.
This needs to be a fast, as they told me yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know this needs to be a fasting. Everyone's a fasting.
Yeah.
No exception.
Last couple of times I've gone, and then my doc says, oh, hey, listen, we're not going to check your blood because it was so good last time. We're not going to. What? I'm starving. You know, because it had been within, you know, the 6 months, and there was a point where it's like, okay, we want to check a couple of things on, like, if medication changes or something. and we'll check it after 3 months and see, you know, this or that. And then it's like, no, I think we're good. I'm not good. I didn't eat. Did you bring donuts?
You know the biggest thing for me? Because, and I've talked about it, I'm a type 2 diabetic, but under control. Most of the time, you could never tell that I was, you know, if you took my blood sugar, that I was even a type 2 diabetic, which is good. You know, the doctor, and for me, you know, because, you know, we talked the other day about Oprah and the whole thing about her stating that, obesity is a disease. It's of the mind. Yeah, I mean, everything's of the mind. But, you know, whether it's a disease, maybe for some people, because of
I think she was implying her thyroid disease. Because she
has thyroid. Out,
she has a thyroid disease.
Well, yeah, but she was making the case for everyone it was. That's how I read it, that everyone, it's a disease.
Yeah.
And I thought about it and I went, you know, that you can't do anything about it because it's in the mind is the point that I got she was making. If that's the point she was making, I would disagree.
Yeah, she said she was misdiagnosed for years. And they said that they were telling her it was something to do with her heart, but it actually turned out that it goes back for years. It had to do with her thyroid, which is something that's very real.
Yeah, that would put it under the classification of a disease. It's tough. You know, it's tough to.
I have thyroid disease.
It's tough to it's tough to diet. It's tough to, you know, control when you got type 2 diabetes. When you go from eating. I probably was eating, I don't know. I was always active and working out, and I always thought, I need carbs. And my doctor would say, you know, what do you eat? What do you think you eat? We figured out I probably was eating 400 grams of carbs a day.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but I work out. He goes, are you running a marathon every day? No. No. Are you 20? No.
Yeah.
You don't need it. And so now, and the average human's supposed to have, what, 300 a day, I think it is what they have it at.
Yeah, there are people that can process, their body processes carbs, and they can live off of mostly carbs and be real thin. I don't know how healthy they are. But
you can eat a lot more, but the suggested number is like 300. You know, they always have the suggested number. And I, you know, when I started, I probably went to 100, 150 and then 100, and now I'm between, I don't think I can get much lower. It's like between 40 and 60 grams of carbs a day. And you're eating 40 grams of carbs a day. There isn't a wide smorgasbord of food to choose from.
Yeah. Narrows it down.
But the worst thing about it is, and now I don't have to take my blood every day because it's not, like I said, there are bad diabetics. And there's, you know, people that are type 1 that have to take it all the time. But I take it more frequently as I get closer to the doctor's appointment, so I can just show him, hey, here's my blood sugar when I'm doing this, blah, blah, blah. Here's my blood pressure when I'm doing this. So I take it under a ton of different circumstances. And for me, you take it after 2 hours. You can take it after 2 hours or after 8. Well, I take plenty of the two-hour ones, and you can tell that my cells are absorbing the insulin and I'm burning the, you know, the glucose and all that. But I don't have time for 8 hours.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm just, because of my sleep shift, it's like, and then I tried it this weekend. I said, okay, let me try to do it during the day, take an 8 hour. So I got up, I ate early in the morning, ate a lot, and then I went out and worked out, did the weights, did everything else, and then rode the bicycle. And I rode the bicycle like 10 miles and did a 2.5 hour workout on the weights. Well, and that took like the first 3 hours. And I said, then I'm going to let my body calm down for 5 hours and do it. 5 hours, I mean, I was absolutely starving. I said, I can't do this.
Yeah.
laying on the couch just watching stuff. I have no energy. And it's like, oh, man, this doesn't work either.
Yeah. I routinely will go without eating, especially when I get busy. It depends on the day. Then there are other days where I'm eating something every 3 hours or so. It just depends on the day. And I never set out to say, okay, today I'm going to fast. It just, my wife sometimes, especially on the weekend, it'll be Saturday at like 6 p.m. You haven't eaten anything all day.
Yeah, see, I never do that.
Yeah.
You know, and unless, like I said, it's specifically for a blood test.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just don't.
Well, that's the thing. If you tell me I have to fast, now we've got a problem. Now I'm going to be hungry.
It could get, it's like.
Right. No, but there are plenty of nights that I come in, you know, wake up at 9:30 or 10 p.m. and I don't eat anything here and won't eat at home until 6 or 7 a.m.
Yeah.
That's probably, I don't know, a couple of times, two, three times a week.
Yeah, I eat more frequently. I just, you know, I just eat smaller amounts. So,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully there's no bloodbath from the fasting blood work.
Let's hope. And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
By the end of yesterday, and I'm reading this one headline, Anna Navarro from The View, context of Trump's bloodbath comments is the memory of January 6th. It's like, oh, so now it's evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And so it evolved. I think it'll disappear in the next couple of days. You know, Joe Scarborough went crazy. We had mentioned that he was one of the first to post it, and Elon Musk blasted him, saying, you've taken it out of context. And he just blew a lid yesterday on Morning Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I think Minka said, you need to be, Minka told him, you need to be a man and start cursing more.
Yeah.
So he threw out the BS, yes, dear, yes, dear, mm-hmm. yes, dear, and yeah. didn't make any real points, salient points. He just made the case that, well, sometimes, you know, when you say bloodbath, you mean bloodbath. And then it was all over social media, him saying that. And then all the times he has used the term bloodbath.
Yeah.
It was just great.
Yeah, that's got to hurt.
But you see, they're moving on very quickly from that one, I believe. I don't believe.
Yeah, it just backfired.
But it backfired big time. You had people like, you know, Jonah Goldberg, who's a never-Trumper, came out and said, when will Democrats learn? They go so crazy, you know, they don't even realize that they're helping Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true.
Yeah, no, they are.
Because you never, you have to have, you can't continually lie and gaslight all the time without not having to prove that what you're saying is accurate. You may not lose 50% of your base. You may lose 0.1%.
Right. Yeah.
At a time. But it adds up over a period of time where you're no longer believable. And now, and I really think it is right, I think it is right now, that so many things they've accused Trump of saying that he didn't say, but it was in code. And I think that was said on Morning Joe yesterday. Well, he's speaking in code. So now we're back to the code thing again, like we were when he was president. Remember that one?
Right, yeah.
Well, he's not saying all right, but he's speaking in code.
Right. Well, it's something they've been using him. During the whole Mueller investigation, well, but we want to know, what were you thinking when you did this or said this? What were you thinking. They're going, which means they're going, they want him to build, they wanted him to build intent currently for something he did way back then. Because they had nothing on him. And this is something the left has been doing. Yeah, but we all know what he really means. We all know how he really thinks. They have nothing. They get handed, they themselves toss these boomerangs day in, day out. It's got to hurt. At some point, you got to learn from the pain, but they don't seem to be learning. They just don't. The bloodbath thing was embarrassing. That's just embarrassing.
Well, yeah, well, but we, yeah, but.
Yeah. Because you can't win on the issues, can you? You know one of the reasons they can't win on the issues?
Because they suck on the issues?
That and the fact that something we've been saying, and our friend Ben Shapiro agrees, Trump's a moderate. He's mainstream on the issues.
Yeah.
You can't, how do you debate a guy that you agree with on a lot of things, but you hate him? See, that's the problem. They can't talk the issues, not just because they're also radicals on many things, but also because he's a moderate, and most people in the mainstream, you know, world are moderates and would agree with them on a number of things. What did he say the other day? You know, he made the joke about, well, I'm only going to be a dictator on day one. And then, of course, they took that and ran with it. But then what did he actually say? And the serious point in that, he said, well, revenge, no, revenge is going to be fixing all the things that are broken. That'll be my revenge, getting us back to where we need to be. And
they didn't cover that.
No, they didn't at all. You know, it's where were they? Well, what does he mean? Where we need to be? How does he think we need to be? I mean, that's
what does he mean? Fix everything. What is fix everything? Does that mean put everybody into concentration camps?
Right. But you can't.
And the best thing is right now, and everybody knows it, is them referring to Trump as Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
While they are pro Hamas and pro genocide of Jews. And they don't realize it yet.
You can't get any closer to being Hitler than being pro genocide of Jews.
Right.
And that's exactly where they are when they're pro Hamas.
Yep.
Yet.
And
he's Hitler.
And they still, many of them don't have the self-awareness that
they don't see it.
Do you understand what you're saying? You're calling him Hitler while you're advocating and promoting what Hitler believed.
Yes.
Hello? Is there anybody in there?
Well, remember, they're still going on. The anti-Jew protests that are going on right now.
Yeah. Sullivan yesterday. It's like, whoa, that was a nice anti-Semitic remark when he was said, why is the United States interfering with Israel's politics? Well, we're not interfering as much as Israel interferes with our politics, which is the Anti-Defamation League said, that's the old anti-Semitic remark that the Jews control the government.
Right.
It's like, oh, wow, here we go again.
No, I mean, it's over and over again.
Sullivan will be hit with that today saying, by the way, with your anti-Semitic remark yesterday, it's like, oh, my God, it's just.
Right.
What a zoo.
Unreal.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
Over 120 tornadoes are recorded in the U.S. this year as of mid-March. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, how does that compare to this same time last year?
We actually had a very active start to the severe weather season last year with a record high 168 tornadoes in the month of January alone. So actually running behind the count of the 2023 tornado number. But the fact that we have seen multiple outbreaks extending through all the months of 2024 make it a bit unusual.
Rippey acknowledges a combination of El Nino and unusually mild conditions has allowed active weather to reach farther than usual northern areas for this time of year. And he reminds us,
the peak of the U.S. severe weather season typically occurs in April, May, and June. And with an active weather pattern expected to continue starting again in late March, we do unfortunately expect more severe weather outbreaks.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Then you saw that Chinese auto executive say that a bloodbath is coming for the American automobile industry because of China's push into EVs.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the word of the year now, isn't it?
I'm telling you, it's just... and then all you do is... You know, you start talking to auto workers as the media is doing. They're like, well, he's right, he's right, he's right, he's right. And again, just totally destroys everything that the media was attempting to promote. And it's just another incident of the mainstream media in collusion with the Democratic Party to tell obvious lies. And you and I said from the very beginning, on this, we both had the exact same thought a couple of hours in. They're almost to the point. They got to the point of number one promoting something that was out of context.
Yep.
To then when the context came out and still sticking by it and doubling down on it to the point of gaslighting.
Yeah.
Can't you see that's what it means?
Right.
And we're gonna just yell louder. And if we yell louder, then somehow you'll be convinced. It didn't work for Biden at the State of the Union address.
Nope.
Yelling alone, yelling without. Now, if you yell with substance, that can still be effective. If you yell with zero substance or you yell to defend your lie, it doesn't work.
Especially on the millionth try.
Yeah.
Boy who cries wolf.
Six six 90 Red Eye. Now's your chance to be the caller. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thanks for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. Listen when and where you want. If you can't, listen live overnight on one of our great radio stations. Over the last couple of days, you've heard the research that was done in Australia, and there's been a ton of different headlines. Is long COVID real? Is it psychological? What is it? I will say this, that with all the talk about it, you had a statement made by Dr. John Garrard in Australia. Hmm. One of the people involved in the study, he said, I want to make it clear that the symptoms that some patients described as having COVID-19 are real. He said in a press conference, what we are saying is that the incidence of those symptoms is no greater in COVID-19 than it is with other respiratory viruses, and that to use the term long COVID is misleading and, I believe, harmful. The data that they're preparing to present at next month's European Congress of Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Disease in Barcelona found that the rates of ongoing symptoms and functional impairment are in no different from other post-viral illnesses. This particular affliction has always been a uniquely discriminating disease. In December of 2022, a CDC study maintained that complications associated with post-viral COVID symptoms contributed to the deaths of 3,500 Americans, but the profile of those who suffer from the ailment is a source of skepticism. So it's like just the continuing research on COVID, as you would expect. And so it's not that long COVID doesn't exist or the symptoms aren't real, but you find that in other
viruses, and also,
is the point that they're trying to make.
When you say long COVID, also, to me, just as a layman, I hear, well, wait a minute. Okay, because it brings the question to mind. Well, wait a minute. Are you saying that the virus is there, which would mean you would still be testing positive for it, maybe on a regular basis or a recurring basis, at a higher rate than normal? The effects of a virus can be, and my gosh, the flu, a number of viruses, you know, upper respiratory things. I've dealt with, I don't know how many bouts of pneumonia over my life. It turns out I have a genetic situation with my that affects my lungs, and we didn't find that out until I was an old guy. And now that we know that, we know, okay, now we know why your history as an adult in this area is what it is. And so, but that's different. And we also know my, in fact, my respiratory specialist, my pulmonary specialist told me, and he was able to show me, he said, here's what we're looking at. And you've got now a situation where, like, my allergies are going to be harder to battle, you know, on the heavy days on allergy season. So we adjusted meds, and, you know, it's not the biggest problem. And but it is, for me, it is noticeable. Long COVID became one of these things where it appeared a lot of people were self-diagnosing, where they were saying, you've got long, where you had the discussion in the medical community that kind of poured over to social media that then kind of turned into, this is just my observation, turned into people going, yeah, well, I've got long COVID. Okay. What does that mean? Because for a lot of the discussions, it was, I'm never going to recover from COVID. All right. Never's a long time. But are you saying the effects of COVID and maybe your immune system changed, or you and I always get back to, okay, what are the facts? What's the science say in something like this? And it's going to vary from person to person. You know, the effect of COVID on me because of my lung situation is going to be different. Or any upper respiratory disease is going to be different for me. Even allergies, as I mentioned, is going to be different for me than the next person. But when this long COVID discussion started, it made it sound like, well, you're going to just, this is going to, here's a good comparison. I had a friend who ultimately passed away. She battled for years with Lyme disease. And it was very real. I mean, it was really, really tough on her. And it, the comparison was basically that. That it was, well, it's like Lyme disease. So there will be days at a time that I can't get out of bed. What does science say about those effects, and where is the direct causation and correlation with COVID? It's important to find the truth. How much of it is psychological? How much of it is, because I can tell you, had a hospital stay in August of 2019, and that's when we discovered what was going on with my lungs. That was pre-COVID. So everything after that, though, I noticed things more. So psychologically, it changed because I'm aware of what my lungs will do, what they're capable of and not capable of, in the effect of a cold or any upper respiratory, even a sinus infection that moves into my chest. Those things are, now I'm keenly aware of them. But the question is, with COVID, is there, can you draw that correlation, and how much of it is psychological on the person, or how much of it is real? Is it, for some people, the effect of those effects of COVID, mm-hmm. which include, if it's long-term, could include exhaustion and may seem similar to, you know, the effects of a Lyme disease and you know, the immune system and everything else. Where is that direct causation or correlation scientifically? I'm very interested in
it. And I think it seems that's what the doctor is sort of saying. You know, long COVID implies you still have COVID.
Right.
And it's exactly. Like, well, no, you have the damage from COVID, which will take a while to heal or whatever. When I had, like any respiratory disease, when I got pneumonia and wasn't paying attention, I got sick and I was in my younger 30s and mm-hmm. I was extremely healthy, but mm-hmm. I got hit real bad. And somebody said, it's just the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And I got hit. It was the worst sick I've ever been.
Yeah.
But I recuperated in a couple of days and think I took off Thursday, Friday. I was back to work by Monday. Yeah. A little bit of laryngitis still left. Well, 2 months later, my lungs still hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the doctor and I said, what's wrong? He goes, nothing now. You had pneumonia. It's going to take a while for your lungs to heal.
Right.
It took over a year.
Mm-hmm.
I felt it for a year. The other thing I have is I have long sprained ankle.
Yeah.
I sprained the ankle, my right foot, 5 times. The fifth time was the worst. I was only 26 years old, so we're talking over 40 years.
Mm.
And you look at that side of the ankle, you know, the little ankle, you know, the ankle ball, whatever you call that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at my right foot, and you look at my left foot, and you look at it, and you're like, oh, my God, you need help on that. No, that's just a muscle that was built up over all the sprained ankles. So I've got tendonitis or arthritis or something in there, and I'm always going to have pain in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have a sprained ankle anymore, but
right,
the damage stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be interesting to see where they get
well, with that. And that's it. It's when you hear the words long COVID, it implies to me, it implied, well, wait a minute, that means the virus is coming back. It's recurring in people over and over again, which can be the case, but we haven't seen that in like long form. And we've seen different variants say, you know, come back and well, this variant comes back, can circle back to you even within the same season. Well, that happens occasionally with other upper respiratory diseases and viruses. But when you say when someone says, I have long COVID, well, it sounds like then you mean you need to be isolated. You're contagious. You need to be isolated, quarantined for, I don't know, indefinitely. But that's why the science is important.
Just very quickly, we had talked earlier about Trump not being able to come up with the bond for the $464 million civil fine from New York. And now what happens next? It's interesting because now I'm seeing more legal analysts, just since we went on the air, more stories written from yesterday about it. And there seems to be a growing consensus. As we've said, you've got a great Eighth Amendment case here,
mm-hmm.
which is excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. On the civil level, excessive fine imposed, unusual punishment inflicted, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You can throw cruel in depending on what you what your definition of cruel is under the Constitution. But you and I were wondering that he hasn't come up with the money. I saw that I almost said comrade. I don't think you'd appreciate comrade. Our colleague, Mark Levin, was saying, where are the Republican billionaires coming out? You know, why aren't they there to bail out Trump? Now, I don't know who he was talking about. And I'm like, okay, that's sort of wishful thinking. There's a variety of ways you could go there. But you and I were wondering, do the lawyers want to get it to the point of her saying, I'm going to start for foreclosure proceedings? Because at that moment, that's the moment, at that point, you go to the federal court for a stay.
Well, damaging actions begin in real time. And then you have even greater standing and greater recourse there. This is beyond ridiculous. But for the defense, really the process kind of has to play out. He's being denied due process here.
Yes, and that's
The foreclosure is the enforcement that becomes especially damaging and might render a decision by one of the higher courts to stop the whole thing and say, whoa, and review it.
As has already been reported, there has never been a civil fine this big in all of New York, corporate or personal.
Right.
Ever.
The largest ever. Yep.
The largest ever, which means it's probably the largest ever in the United States. It's one of the largest ever. I mean, for an individual, especially.
Right.
An individual who owns that company.
Right.
And so right there, and you have fraud where there's no victim.
Right.
And in fact, the victim said, no, we do business with them again. So who's the victim and why, there's no losses, there's no damages to be paid anywhere.
In fact, those who did business with him made money. It's the opposite of being a victim.
And so you're talking about appraisal values. To me, there has never been a more clear, because when you look at most of the time the Eighth Amendment has been used, it's when somebody goes to death row, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the nuance of life in prison versus death row for somebody who has murdered somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So you know precisely who the victim is. This, to me, is the most clear-cut violation of the Eighth Amendment in my lifetime, from a civil point of view, maybe overall.
Well, because it is a proverbial death sentence for his business.
Yeah.
In that state.
Yep.
Which is where the brunt of his business is. You know, that is the heart, the foundation of the Trump organization is New York. And Letitia James, of course, knows that.
Because you could could trigger a federal, immediate stay on this, going nothing be paid on this until it's looked at.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, finally, as we said, you have some of the legal folks out there talking about Trump being able to use, the fine against him from Attorney General James of $464 million as an Eighth Amendment violation. Because from the first day you and I asked that question, we said, how can't this be an Eighth Amendment violation? And we were shocked that nobody was talking about it in the legal field at all. Like, the first thing you would bring up is, well, this is an obvious Eighth Amendment. You know, because what we were told was he can't appeal anything. Well, can he appeal that the fine is excessive?
Right.
Under the Eighth Amendment, that it's clearly written. It's like nobody was discussing it. Now they are, which is good.
Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.